This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So the business community has had enough of the abuse. They're done. As I reported last week, a group of businesses are pushing a repeal of the job-killing Seattle head tax via an initiative. And Dick's Drive-In is one of the businesses leading the way. Saul Spady is the president of a marketing firm, Creative Empowerment. He's also the grandson of Dick's Drive-In founder, Dick Spady. And Saul joins me now. Saul, thank you so much for getting up early for me.
Hey, no worries. Happy to be out here. You know, when Seattle's kind of at odds this aggressively with a city council like this, I think we got to get up early.
Well, then tell us about this initiative, specifically what it does and how you plan on getting it on the ballot.
Gotcha. Well, to be specific, it's actually a Seattle referendum to start. So we're literally just doing a referendum on the head tax that was, or jobs tax that was just passed. So this $275 per employee per year tax is what we're gathering signatures to pretty much put it on the ballot to give Seattle citizens an opportunity to respond. Because my opinion is when we do a head tax that is literally a factor of six larger than any other one in the country, and then you have the upswell of energy and voice that we've gotten, not just out of the Seattle business community, but out of Seattle homeowners, out of Seattle citizens. It's not a grand compromise when your council votes 9-0 to pass this thing. Yeah. It's kind of a slap in the face.
It's ignoring everybody.
They are literally ignoring the opinion of the people of Seattle and instead are tuning their ears to a small group that might possibly be paid to tell them their opinion by another council member.
So you need to get almost 18,000 votes, and you don't have, or signatures, so you don't have that much time to do it. What's the plan?
Right. No, we got started. The clock started when Jenny signed the law. So we have to collect about 18,000 signatures in 29 days. So our deadline's June 15th. Right now, we're really trying to mobilize our grassroots group. I mean, this is where I know you said the business community, but really from my perspective, this is coming out of the small businesses like mine and really just Seattle homeowners. You know, one of my favorite people I've worked with is a woman who is a single mom in Ballard who has a house. And the reason why she's out here is because of public safety, because she doesn't feel safe going out in Ballard with her kids. And so this is an opportunity not just for big businesses, but small businesses and just regular Seattleites to really put a referendum on this law and then as well a referendum on our city council to let them know that we're not willing to just let them spend all of the money in this city, especially with budgets starting to go down in the coming years as construction slows down.
If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Saul Spady. He's the president of a marketing firm called Creative Empowerment. He's the grandson of Dick's Drive-In founder, Dick Spady. He is part of the effort leading the way in this referendum that would overturn the Amazon head tax. Although, as Saul, you'll point out, they said this was about going after Amazon, and yet here we are talking about all these other businesses that are arguably more impacted than Amazon.
Well, and Seattle is much bigger than Amazon. You know, the council really this line of it's the 3% largest businesses in Seattle. Well, here's the joke to that. 3% of the largest businesses of Seattle is actually 150,000 employees. This is a quarter of our jobs in the city of Seattle facing the largest head tax by a factor of six in the country. My line is what the council is doing is they're literally showing us that they don't have the answers. Their only answer is to pass a vindictive tax on growth. Because they honestly have no idea how to deal with this. I mean, I was sitting down with Mike O'Brien, and he was almost begging me to tell him an answer. And I said, Mike, how about you take some of that city land about a half mile near the light rail, zone it for high-density dorm-style buildings that millennials like me are really desperate that we don't have in the city, and instead of building it with city money, how about you do a lease just like Key Arena and give them a 50-year lease to run these buildings that are going to be really useful for the city of Seattle? And I swear to you, Mike just looked at me. He wasn't even capable of kind of taking that in as an idea and being like, oh, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea. And this is what I mean by, like, we have a council that is literally just trying to pass a law that's reactive to the growth instead of being proactive and trying to create an incredible 21st century city that we know is available to us in Seattle. That's why homeowners are angry right now, not business owners. This is being driven from the bottom up.
And I think that's an incredibly important point here, because they will blame Amazon and some of the other big businesses for raising the rents, and we're going to pretend that the majority of people who are homeless are simply homeless because they were one paycheck away from a rent increase that put them on the street. But that's not the case. But let's just talk about housing affordability, which would not be an issue if this council, many of whom were in power at the time, allowed for developers to build just even one extra story higher than they currently do. The reason why it's unaffordable, in air quotes, because it's not all that unaffordable, it's just expensive. The reason we're at that point is because you did not allow, as the council, developers to actually build enough apartment complexes to meet the demand of people wanting to live here.
Well, and very specifically as a millennial here, it's also a variety of apartment complexes. I have a really good friend who lives in the city, who's a musician, who moved here the last 3 years because the music scene is just so great. And he's been waiting for this $500 room in a dorm-style building that he'd love to live in. And instead, he's crashing on my couch and other friends' couches because there isn't a variety of housing. You know, if the only building that the city zones for developers to build is high, is bedroom and two-bedroom buildings, that's what we'll end up with.
Yeah.
So in many ways, we've brought us to this point in Seattle, but I also think that what you're seeing is a citizens' referendum to bring ourselves out. There are simple solutions in front of us. Other cities have set up programs where they pay any homeless person the minimum wage to go pick up trash and connect them with services and temporary housing. The Millionaires Club has been doing that in the city of Seattle for 100 years, and the government's never partnered with them. We have this idea of dorm-style housing that we can do. And then the final one that's most important is really enforcement of the encampment. You kind of nailed it. We're living in a modern 21st century world where everyone is networked, including the homeless population of the United States. And when you hear for the last 4 to 5 years that no one who sets up an encampment on the street will encounter any police resistance or any community resistance, that leads to this explosion of homelessness that you're not seeing anywhere else in the United States right now.
There is talk of a list, a boycott list. There are folks talking on Shama Sawant's page to get all the names of the businesses, large and small, who support your efforts on this referendum, and they'll call for a boycott. How concerned are you with that?
All I'm concerned about is I don't have a support list up yet. So I want to get a list of all the businesses that are pushing this forward, that do care about the future of Seattle, that care about creating fair dorm-style housing, that want to have jobs available for, you know, the population here that needs it. We should be supporting these businesses. This is not a moment to separate ourselves. It's a moment to come together. And I know it's a hard thing to say about Shama, but I wish I could sit down with her and have a conversation, because I know she's probably not willing to do that. But the only way we're going to make this out of Seattle is together as a community, as small business owners, large business owners, homeowners, kind of looking for solutions. And really, with this referendum, we're going to do this until the council catches up. And hopefully soon, maybe it'll be 2019, the council will be able to join us on this reform to really push Seattle forward.
Do you think that's going to happen? Because there's no indication that folks like Mike O'Brien or Shama Sawant or Lorena Gonzalez are ever going to change. And that maybe this is a bigger picture issue of we just need a different ideological perspective represented in the council.
You know, we need some common sense solutions in Seattle. This isn't about Republican or Democrat, you know, progressive or conservative. This is about just building a city that has some simple answers. And what I'm saying is in 2018, it's a referendum on the jobs tax. And in 2019, it's going to be a referendum on what I'm calling the head tax seven, the seven council members that voted yes for their head tax. And, you know, it's our job to vote them out.
I just got a text from Lance in Seattle wanting to know where he can sign the petition. So how can people actually get involved?
Totally. I have a Facebook page set up for the grassroots group called No Seattle Head Tax. Join the Facebook group. I have a PDF where you can print out your own petition. Make sure it's printed double-sided on 11 by 17. We can't alter them in any way. So, you know, blue or black ink to sign. The city doesn't make it easy for us to do a referendum on their law, but together, I'll tell you, there were people out there this weekend and we're going to keep getting more mobilized. And I would be shocked if we don't hit this number.
Yeah.
Because people are out there on their own volition. And I'll say again, it is not Jeff Bezos out on the street corner. It's a single mom with two kids in Ballard who doesn't feel safe. This issue is so much bigger than the business community right now.
I made it really easy for folks to connect with this Facebook page. If you send the keyword head tax, one word head tax, to the number 1-800-465-8770, text the keyword head tax to 1-800-465-8770. We'll hook you up with the link so you can go ahead and follow the No Seattle Head Tax page on Facebook. But more importantly, you can get a link to the actual document that you can print and put your signatures on there so we can get this referendum on the November ballot. I've been talking again with Saul Spady from Creative Empowerment. Saul, thank you so much for joining me live this morning. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Jason. I'll have to be down to get you some petitions soon.
Absolutely. I can't wait to put my name on that thing. Again, text the keyword head tax to 1-800-465-8770. That's a none better tax resolution hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio this Monday morning. Again, if you want to get involved in fighting the head tax, send me a keyword, head tax. One word, not two, no spaces, just head tax to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you over a link to the Facebook page for No Seattle Head Tax. If you don't have Facebook, do not worry. You can still read the posts, which tell you how you can participate. So text the keyword, one word, head tax, to 1-800-465-8770. Starbucks has a new ridiculous policy. It's not the policy that anyone can use the bathrooms. That is their old ridiculous policy. Now anyone can use a Starbucks even if they don't buy, which means the stores that are already really, really crowded will get even more crowded. And if you're a paying customer who's buying your little muffin and your latte, hold the cannabis oil, please, you're likely not going to be able to find a table or an open seat because you got a whole bunch of people who don't even use the Starbucks, just hanging out. And this, I think, is the latest example of how social justice warriors essentially force businesses into making really, really bad decisions that will end up hurting the businesses, all to avoid the fallout on Twitter or Facebook of social justice warriors who are complaining and calling for boycotts and calling them racist, blah, 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 blah. Now, I don't think Starbucks should get a pass ultimately because this is their doing. I'm not necessarily blaming the social justice warriors out there. They do this because there are companies like Starbucks that act cowardly. They allow them to go forward with this kind of move. Because rather than just tell you the truth about what happened in Philadelphia, because this all stems from the Philadelphia incidents, which they could have easily just said, that was an isolated incident. We are teaching these people why they should not have done that. The person who actually did it is no longer an employee here, forced out. Instead of having that conversation, they just give in to a bunch of bullies and lunatics. Because the one question a lot of us are asking now is, is this just carte blanche now for homeless people to hang out in the Starbucks all day? They can use the bathrooms. They can hang out on all the tables. I know that you don't really care about that if you're a progressive activist in Seattle. But those of us who actually like to go to Starbucks, we're going to be impacted, which means we're likely to go to Starbucks less if that's what ends up happening, which then hurts Starbucks, which then hurts the low-wage workers who are there. It's all circular. You say you care about the low-wage workers, social justice warriors, and yet you're forcing these companies into positions that end up hurting those same workers. Now, I looked up the policy that they had in place, and they cite their mission. They want to be more in aligned with their mission. Did you know that this was the mission of Starbucks? I didn't realize this. To inspire and nurture the human spirit, one person, one cup, and one neighborhood at a time.
All right.
Which awfully. I don't even know what that means. It means nothing. Yeah. I mean, it sounds pretty, right? It sounds to your word lofty. But you're serving. You know what their mission is? To sell you goods and make a profit. That's the mission of any company. Now you can have added points to that mission. You also want to do good in the community, and you'll put some of your money into that. I find it odd that their mission, which they highlight in this new policy, includes one cup at a time, when you're telling people you no longer need to have that cup in order to use the Starbucks. And so how long before they abandon this? Now, they do have in the policy, they say if someone is being disruptive in some way, you can remove them. I don't know if that means someone who's a homeless dude who hasn't showered in 3 months is just hanging out there all day. I don't know if that on its face is disruptive, but at some point you're now forcing your managers on site at these individual Starbucks to make that call. And at some point you're going to have them removing some homeless folks from your Starbucks, and then that will be the next controversy. Homeless people are kicked out of Starbucks. So inhumane. All they want to do is use the free Wi-Fi to search for jobs on that phone that they don't own, on that Surface laptop that they don't have. It's absolutely ridiculous. But that's Starbucks now. Social justice coffee. Good for you, Starbucks. We'll see if this ends up going the way that you think. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Would love your text messages on the Starbucks story. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, it's the Big Local. Race propaganda being taught at Tumwater schools, plus cannabis coffee on Bainbridge Island. It's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
So we all know this. The media focuses, hyper-focused, on the city of Seattle. And as a result of that, they end up ignoring all the important and interesting, and yes, sometimes quirky stories happening all across Washington State. So 7:30 weekday mornings right here on the Jason Rancho. Thanks to our friends over at Tulalip Resort Casino, we do something called The Big Local, where we focus on you, the cities you live in, and we ignore the city of Seattle. And we start this morning by going over something that's under review over at the Tumwater School Board, because they have decided, yeah, we're going to lean in to the progressive social justice policies. But they end up just propagandizing your students. That's what's going to end up happening. So the Tumwater School District Board of Directors, they're going to vote on a policy called the Equity, Diversion, and Inclusion Policy. And they're doing it because, according to this policy, they say every student deserves respectful learning environments in which diversity is valued and contributes to successful academic outcomes. Okay, that's fair enough. Good for them. But in order to achieve that, they want to teach your kids that only white people can be racist. And racism in every single form is the fault of white people. Now, this is a district that's no different than a lot of others. Tumwater has seen white students excel while communities of color are disproportionately disciplined. They get more of the suspensions and expulsions. They experience higher dropout rates, and there's a variety of factors. The policy, however, blames, quote, complex societal and historical factors, and they'd like to address them with, quote, equity tools, procedures, and strategies to eliminate systematic disparities and ensure systematic equity for students, staff, and family. So part of those equity tools will be to take a whole bunch of vulnerable students, young kids, and radically redefine some basic language, some basic words. And they're doing that because they want to satisfy their progressive street cred. They got to go out and say, I'm a progressive. You see what I did? I just redefined what race means. In fact, when you look at the definition for race, they say it's, quote, a political construction created to concentrate power with white people and legitimize dominance over non-white people. That's not what race means. That's stupid. And by the way, if that's what race means, then aren't you, as a district, creating a political construct created to concentrate power with white people? Because you have records of how many students are of color at your school. You do that as a means to give that information for demographic purposes and tracking to the federal government. In fact, you make money based on some of those numbers that you collect, which is kind of weird because it feels like then you're part of the problem, Tumwater. Now, I suppose I can offer like a nuanced take on why I disagree with that position or that definition of race. I'm not going to offer that. I'm simply going to call it stupid, because the truth is, number one, yes, it's a stupid definition. And the people who believe stuff like that, you're never going to change their mind. You're never going to change your mind. And likewise, you're never going to change my mind. Because I am with the vast, vast, vast majority of people who realize that the only political construction here happens to be the administrators who want to create an army of social justice warriors. That's what this is about. This is called propaganda. You get them young. You get them to start thinking about things the way that you want them to see things. In this case, ideologically. And then when they get into the world, they take on what you just propagandized them into, and they try to change policy. That's all that this is about. Their definition of racism, not all that shocking, but it's also kind of stupid. Because what it does is it excuses hateful, bigoted actions when people who aren't white commit them. Their definition of racism is, quote, a complex system of beliefs and behaviors grounded in a presumed superiority of the white race. These beliefs and behaviors are conscious and unconscious, personal and institutional, and result in the oppression of people of color and benefit the dominant group, whites. A simpler definition is racial prejudice plus power equals racism. So in other words, according to Tumwater, if they go ahead and vote this policy into play, only white kids can be racist because all white people have power, except, as we know, not all white people have power. Indeed, if you are low income and white, you don't have very much power at all. You have very little power. Now, if you're wealthy and black, you have more power than someone who is poor and white. Socioeconomic factors play a role in whether or not you have power or quote-unquote privilege. But the truth is, when you look at the actual statistics, if you're looking at someone who's poor, regardless of their race, they have a disproportionately high rate of kids who drop out of school, who get disciplined, but they won't tell you that because they want to push a very specific piece of propaganda. This is happening right now in Tumwater. If you've got a kid who is in the Tumwater School District, please do yourself a favor and get more active and tell them that you don't support this. They've actually got a survey up that you can go ahead and connect to on my blog. So you can actually tell them, no. We're not in favor of this nonsense. In fact, if you want to read my take on this, and you want to get a link to that survey, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. I'll go ahead and send you the link back. And if you're not in the Tumwater School District, I think this is incredibly important. You have to share this story. Go ahead and get that link. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Put that link up on your Facebook page. Put the link up on your Twitter page. You can go to my Twitter feed and just hit retweet twitter.com/JasonRantz, or go to the Facebook page and share it there, facebook.com/JasonRantzShow. It's important that we put a spotlight on this nonsense, because usually you and I don't find out about things like this. Usually we don't see this because we can't pay that close attention to every single policy any individual agency is considering. So once we do find out, we got to put the pressure on. We got to get it out there, so they don't feel like they are enabled to make these kinds of decisions without adequately informing the public. So text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, Brendan McGill, he is a chef, and he tried to set up shop in King County where he would lace his lattes with cannabis oil. Although, we shouldn't say lace, which is, I think, how the Kitsap Sun puts it. It's not lacing it. I mean, he's telling you that he's putting it in there.
Lacing definitely sounds a little bit subversive.
Yeah, like I'm doing this and I'm tricking you. So he got shut down in King County because they said, no, you can't put CBD oil, cannabis oil, into your... That's not safe. Can't do it. So the dude was all like, okay, well, screw you guys. I'm going to go to Bainbridge Island. I'm going to set up shop there. Only they also have stopped him from doing this. The district environmental health director, John Keese, said that while CBD extracted from hemp seeds is, quote, generally recognized as safe, end quote, CBD derived from other parts of the hemp plant is not approved as a food additive by the Food and Drug Administration. Again, according to the Kitsap Sun, district officials said there's concern consumers could be exposed to chemicals used to grow and process hemp plants. Oh, shut up. You know what this is really about? People not understanding that you can't really get high off of cannabis oil. I think you have to have it in such high dosages that you can get maybe a little bit of a high, but I think at that point you're just dead. You're just overdosing on cannabis oil. You can take cannabis oil and you don't get high. You get the other benefits of it, which just is kind of a chilling effect.
It certainly depends on what, or my understanding at least of how it works, is it depends on what kind of oil you're using.
There's a whole,
I mean, you can't,
this oil
can't
here,
have THC in it.
Okay, this oil here does not get you high. And he's only talking about, I think it was 10 milligrams. I can't remember what it was. We're going to try and get the chef on to talk about it. And if you're concerned about this, look at the 2017 World Health Organization report. They said, in humans, CBD exhibits no effects indicative of any abuse or dependence potential. The only reason McGill wanted to do this was he found out that when he put it in his own coffee, which you can do legally in Washington State, it just made him like really chill, but also really focused. Because the caffeine is giving you that focus, and the CBD oil is giving you this sort of the feel of a body high without the actual high. I don't see what's wrong with this. These are people who are freaked out about weed. They think all weed is the same. They think cannabis, because cannabis oil says cannabis in it, it must get you high. I don't think anyone has any idea what they're talking about, and this just comes out of fear. If you're an adult who can legally purchase CBD oil, I don't know why they wouldn't allow you as an adult to just show your ID and have a CBD oil latte.
And that's what he was IDing people that ordered this.
That's my understanding. Because I don't think you can take CBD oil unless you have a prescription if you're under the age of 18. Or maybe 20. I don't remember.
The law is so specific. And I mean, you're right. It's because of fear. But also, like, if they are going to allow this, it's going to have to be a really robust policy that they explain exactly what is and is not okay. Because I think that's what they worry about, is like some type of slippery slope argument where it's like, I can put CBD oil in it. What else can I put into this drink?
Other stuff that doesn't get you high. How about that? I mean, you.
But that's very specific.
But they allow for sugary beverages, right? Yeah. You have milkshakes, which are incredibly unhealthy and fattening, filled with sugar bombs. That's okay. But CBD oil, which is not addictive, which does not get you high, which comes from an actual plant, all of a sudden, whoa, can't do that. Dude just wants to be chill and drink his coffee. I'm kind of aren't you kind of curious about this? I want to try it. Let's bring him in. Can we do it on the air?
You want him to bring in?
I mean, the coffee still has to be good.
Yeah.
The coffee isn't good because I don't like lattes.
The photo I saw was green, which I was a little bit...
I don't know if that was like a special, and if it was even the CBD oil one.
The oil wouldn't be green.
Yeah, I don't know what made it green.
That seems like an aesthetic choice, which I wouldn't...
Some stock photo they had.
Maybe.
From like St. Patrick's Day. It wasn't even his coffee. It was the shake from... The Shamrock Shake from McDonald's. Just put it in a cup. It's like, hey, let's pass this on. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Again, I'll get you that link on how Tumwater is going after your kids with some pop propaganda. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason RANTZ Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for spending your morning with me each and every day and telling your friends about it. That's how the show actually spreads. We may now have a motive, or at least a partial motive, in the Santa Fe High School shooting. It seems that it started out as a targeted killing of a girl. Her name is Shayna Fisher, and she was a girl in that art class. Her mom's name is Sadie. She was talking to the LA Times over the weekend and said that the shooter, Dimitrios Pogorchis, was giving her daughter some problems for about 4 months. Then she talked with CBS News.
About 5 or 6 days ago, she said, Mom, you know, if there was a shooter in our school and they came in and shot, I would haunt him forever if he killed me. So I think she had some kind of clue, you know, that something was going to happen.
And she said Dimitrios kept making advances on her daughter. And she repeatedly would tell him no, that she wasn't interested.
This guy kept harassing her about wanting to be with her, like, in a relationship.
So at some point, Pogorchis was getting a little bit too aggressive. So aggressive that the girl decided to stand up to him and turn him down. And apparently it was done in public at this class, or at a class, and he felt embarrassed. So then a week later, he decides to kill her. And her father, Thomas, believes that she was the first victim that he killed.
I would like to look at him in the eyes and ask him why. Why would he go in there and kill such a beautiful kid? She was the first one he killed. I don't know if I saw this kid, if I would put my hand on him and bless him, or if I would jump over the counter and tear him apart. I think I would put my hand on him and bless him, but I think I'd be gritting my teeth the whole time.
Much better person than I am. Much better person than most of us would be if we were put in a similar circumstance. So it sounds like, and again, this according to reports, that after he shot her, he would target the kids he didn't like. That's what he apparently told cops. And yet over the weekend, as we tend to see, because we live in a world where people are deranged, they're going after Trump. They're saying it's President Trump's fault and it's still the NRA's fault, even though he used guns that were illegally obtained. Didn't use an AR-15, by the way, despite the Houston Chronicle putting out that report initially. This is Trump's fault? This is Trump's fault? A kid who's dealing with some sort of mental illness, because I have to assume that if you're put in a position that you're embarrassed and you go ahead and kill people as a result of that, that is, you're dealing with something wrong upstairs. Because we've all been embarrassed before. Some people go up to others and ask them out on a date and they're rejected in public and you feel really bad. And then you kind of just go on with your life. Maybe you feel depressed for a day or two. Maybe you feel embarrassed for a bit. But then you just move on. And we've all been rejected publicly and privately. We don't go ahead and do this. So something was wrong with him. Something is wrong with him. And we're going to blame President Trump? Really? I mean, really? What is wrong with people? Like, what is wrong with people? You've got this tragedy here. And yet again, you exploit it because you don't like the president? This legitimately is not a gun control issue. Not this one. You could have made the case, and the case was made with Stoneman Douglas that had to do with gun control. Okay, I'll have that debate. Even though I disagree with some of the quote-unquote solutions, I'll at least have that debate with you. I'm not sure how this is a gun control issue. He used a shotgun and a handgun, which he wasn't able to purchase, and he didn't purchase. The NRA has blood on its hands still. I'm seeing lots of voices from actual students here. I'm seeing it in print. You're not really seeing it on CNN yet. And I think part of the reason you're not seeing it on CNN is because these students, the ones I've seen so far at least, coming from a small city in Texas, they don't have virulently anti-gun beliefs like some of the big city kids do. And maybe that's why you're not seeing that on CNN. What you are seeing on CNN is just an utter lie. In fact, it was in their original reporting of this. And I remember because I read it live Friday morning in the last segment. The second sentence in talking about the school shooting in Santa Fe said that this was the 22nd school shooting since the start of this year. It is not the 22nd shooting. That is a lie. It is not the 22nd school shooting. That is a patent lie. Why are they lying? Because CNN is in the business of pushing gun control. That's why you're not hearing the anti-gun voices on CNN. David Hogg was on CNN for like 14 days straight, every single show. And he was on because he was pushing an anti-gun message. What they'll do is, and they'll hide this, they'll pretend that this is just journalism. They'll tell you that this is the 22nd shooting, so they can tell you that it's almost one shooting per week, which then sets the narrative that your kids are in danger, that you basically live in a war zone, that when you send your kid to school today, he or she's going to get shot. There's a high likelihood of that. That's what CNN wants you to think, because then as a result of that fear based on a lie, that you go ahead and start supporting gun control measures. You put pressure on politicians to support gun control measures. That's what CNN is all about. We'll explore their lie a little bit more later on in the show. And kudos to an anchor over at KHOU-TV in Houston who just called it out for what it was, a lie. We'll play that audio later on in the show. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.